Well, we're in the treated to the full complement this year. It's a Shana Me'uberes. So we have the five parshas from Truma all the way to the end, each one to be considered by itself. And the parsha of Vayakel, I think, is often characterized as a repeat, in a sense, of Parshas Truma. In that parsha, it is to building what Parshas Truma is to instructing. But it's all about the Mishkan. As we'll see, there's quite a bit more to it than that. But let's begin by referring to a phrase, which is a kind of a recurring phrase, perhaps even a motif, within Parshas Vayakel. And that is the phrase, Chacham Lev. We find that those who were involved in the construction of the Mishkan are called Chachmei Lev. That is, as early on as Pasuk Yud of our Parsha, V'kol Chacham Lev Bachem Yavo'u V'ya'asu. And the question that is worth pondering is, what is the significance of the term Chacham Lev? After all, Chacham Lev translates wise of heart, which is certainly a good thing. But elsewhere we find that wise people are simply called Chachamim. Why were Chachamim not good enough to build the Mishkan? Specifically, we need Chachmei Lev. And I believe a very meaningful answer to this question will come from considering the term Chachmei Lev, or Chacham Lev, as we find it elsewhere. There is a Gemara in Maseches Sota and Daf Yud Gimel, and it makes a very interesting statement with reference to the evening prior to leaving Mitzrayim. Says the Gemara, come and see how beloved mitzvahs are to Moshe. How do we see this? Because look at what everyone was involved in the night before they left Mitzrayim. The Jewish people were gathering gold and silver, while Moshe was gathering mitzvos. The reference, of course, is to Moshe going to the Nile to fulfill the obligation that was placed adjured by Yosef to bring his bones up for burial. Everyone went out in pursuit of gold and silver, and Moshe is pursuing mitzvahs. That shows you how beloved mitzvahs are to Moshe. As it says the Gemara, the Pasuk in Mishle, Chacham Lev Yikach Mitzvos. One who is wise of heart will take mitzvos. And that's the Gemara. I think it's quite a well-known statement of the Gemara, comparing Moshe with the rest of the Jewish people. And many Mefarshim raise a simple question. It seems that we picked the one occasion in history where it's not correct to criticize the Jewish people for collecting gold and silver. After all, they were commanded to do so. For once in our history, it was a mitzvah to collect gold and silver. I mean, you know, we like to stay in practice ever since, just in case it ever comes back. But it's a mitzvah. So you cannot command the Jewish people to collect gold and silver and then turn on them and say, you're so materialistic, why don't you get involved in mitzvahs? They are involved in mitzvahs. To command them to do something and criticize them for doing it, well, that seems slightly unjust. There's a great phrase in modern Hebrew which I think really sums up the situation here, and that is zelo fair. Really, really pretty much encapsulates the matzav here. So what is it that we're saying? Everyone's involved in mitzvahs. So how do we see how beloved mitzvahs are to Moshe? But the Mefarshim explained, there's a very deep idea here. The truth of the matter is that the gold and silver which we collected when we left Mitzrayim were not the real fulfillment of V'acharein chen yetzu b'rechush gadol. It was foretold to Avram that after the whole exile was finished, Acherechein Yetzu Berchush Gadol, they'll leave with great wealth. But that was not referring to gold and silver. It's not reasonable that Hashem should say there'll be this great persecution, but in the end, there'll be a payout. The gold and silver is not Rechush Gadol. The Rechush Gadol with which we left Mitzrayim was we left as a Jewish people ready to receive the Torah. It's a quality that we had attained. And indeed, as the Ksava Kabbalah points out, always sensitive to the nuances of Lashon HaKodesh, when you talk about a lot of money, that's not called Rechush Gadol. That's called Rechush Rav. Rav means a lot. Gadol means great. When Yaakov and Esav, the country wasn't big enough for the two of them because they had such plentiful assets, the Pasuk says, Ki hayar Rechusham Rav. A lot of money is called Rechush Rav. Rechush Gadol is something else. You leave with something great. The only thing is, most people do not relate to being receiving mitzvahs as Rechush Gadol, as great treasure. And therefore, as a kindness to Avram, and that's the well-known Rashi, in Parshas Bo, Hashem requests of Moshe that they collect gold and silver. Daber na be'aznei ha'am. Please ask them, says Rashi, ein na ela loshon bakosha. Na is a request that Avram shouldn't complain and say you fulfilled va'avodim ve'inu osam, the persecution, and you didn't fulfill va'acherechein yetzu b'chush gadol. So it's that Avram shouldn't complain? Why not? Because Hashem promised. But here we see that the promise is not about gold and silver. Avram will complain that most people do not relate to mitzvahs as a great treasure. So give them something they can relate to. That's a kindness to Avram. Please, ask them to collect gold and silver. Because that's the nature of most people. The exception is Moshe. Moshe is someone for whom, if you say to him, picture Rechush Gadol, go out in pursuit of treasure, Moshe doesn't need gold and silver in order to satisfy his instinctive and emotional definition of great treasure. For Moshe, when he hears treasure, he sets off in pursuit of a mitzvah. It turns out that everyone was involved in the same mitzvah that night before we left Mitzrayim. They were all involved in Acherechein Yetzu Berchush Gadol. The defining question is, what is Rechush Gadol? If you're most people, it's gold and silver. But if you're Moshe, it's a rare mitzvah. And that shows you how beloved mitzvahs are to Moshe. Bo ure'eh, kama chavivos mitzvos al Moshe Rabbeinu. He just has to hear the term Rechush Gadol. He sets off in pursuit of a mitzvah. And the verse that is quoted to illustrate this is the verse in Mishlei, Chacham Lev Yikach Mitzvahs. Wise of heart will take mitzvahs. Many people are wise, but wisdom resides in the head. Many people know in their head certain things to be true, but they don't feel it in their heart. That's a vast distance between the head and the heart. Your average Torah observant Jew will tell you, if pressed, that the greatest treasure is Torah and mitzvahs. But if you ask him to close his eyes and picture Torah and mitzvahs, and picture great treasure, it's not mitzvahs. It's a treasure chest, it's a cave, it's a desert island, each one for their proclivities and their imagination, but it's temporal money. Chachamim do mitzvahs, but might value other things. Chacham Lev is a person whose wisdom has entered his heart. That means he feels in his heart that which he knows to be true in his mind. And someone like that, Chacham Lev, Yikach Mitzvahs, he will take mitzvahs. He will treasure mitzvahs. He will collect mitzvahs. Yikach mitzvahs, everyone in life takes something, collects or prizes something that is most valuable to them. Many people do mitzvahs and prize other things. But a chacham lev yikach mitzvahs. And this gives us great insight into this term, chacham lev, one whose wisdom has entered his heart. And with this in mind, I think we can understand why the people who were involved in the construction of the Mishkan were called chachmei lev. The qualification and the requirement is to be a chacham lev, wise of heart. And why is that? Because the basic requirement of the construction of the Mishkan is that it needs to be lishma, v'yikhuli truma, v'asuli, it has to be done l'shem shamayim, for the sake of heaven. When you're surrounded by gold and silver and precious materials, the stuff of which the Mishkan was made, if you don't maintain focus, you can lose your l'shem shamayim, and the means can become the ends. The focal point can become the materials themselves. Who can be entrusted that as much as they are surrounded by and involved with on an ongoing basis all of these precious materials and precious metals and precious stones and still keep their eye on the Asuli Mikdash? There's only one type of person. He's called a Chacham Lev, someone who emotionally understands and fully absorbs that the ultimate treasure is that of making an abode for the divine presence. He will keep his head where it needs to be, his focus where it needs to be, and make sure that everything he does is l'shem shamayim. And so what seems to be a very simple expression, chacham lev, I think represents a very special level of having absorbed wisdom, the type of which is required for making the Mishkan. So having discussed those who were qualified, let us take a look at the construction of the Mishkan itself. As we've noted, we've heard all about this already in Parshas Truma. And now we hear it again in Parshas Vayakhel. And it seems like a replay, but it is far from it. Because actually, to do justice to our Parsha, Parshas Vayakhel, we need to note not just that which is repeated from Parshas Truma, but that which actually is different than was originally stated in Parshas Truma. And these differences are large and small. And we need to take note of as many as we can. With reference to large differences, I think it doesn't get bigger than the order of how things are meant to be done. The Mishkan comprises the vessels of the Mishkan, the Aron, Menorah, and Shulchan, and also the body of the Mishkan, the beams and the coverings, that which makes the structure. And which comes first? The Kelim, the vessels of the Mishkan, or the Mishkan itself? Well, in Parshas Truma, as we know, first discussed are all the Kelim. Va'asu Aron, Va'asisa Menorah, Va'asisa Shulchan, and then we come to the body of the Mishkan. In our Parsha, it's reversed. We see that the first thing to be made was the body of the Mishkan, the structure itself, and then the vessels. What is behind that change? And the truth is, there's a very interesting episode or exchange mentioned in the Gemara with regards to this specific thing. The Gemara states in Maseches Brachos in Daf Nun Hei that when Moshe was told to tell Bezalel, Hashem says to Moshe, go and tell Bezalel, make the Mishkan and the Kelim. First the structure, then the vessels. And says the Gemara, Moshe reversed the order. He went and told Bezalel, Hashem has said, make the vessels and then make the Mishkan. Says Bezalel to Moshe, Minhago Shalolam, You know, it's the way of the world. When a person makes a house, the first he builds the house, and then he constructs the furniture. But you're telling me to make the furniture first, and then make the structure of the Mishkan. But if I make the furniture first, where am I going to put them? Kelim sha'ani oseh leheichan achnisim. If I make the kelim first, where will I put them? Good China. Says Bezalel to Moshe, could it be that what Hashem actually said to you was the opposite of what you're telling me? That first, which we know actually was true, that first to make the Mishkan and then the kelim. And Moshe conceded that that was true. And he said to Bezalel, you were Bezalel Kael. What's Bezalel? In the shadow, in the wings. You must have been there, overhearing what Hashem said to me. Because you are in fact right, that Hashem said, first make the Mishkan, and then the Kelim. I think if we can borrow an expression from the menorah, this piece of Gemara is kula miksha achas. It is one kasha from beginning to end. It is absolutely baffling. Firstly, how do we understand that Moshe changed the order in the first place? The Gemara tells us he received direct instructions. Tell Bezalel, first the Mishkan and then the Kelim. And Moshe went and reversed it. Why would he reverse it? What's behind Moshe's thinking, if we may ask? Secondly, Bezalel's question / objection. You know, says Bezalel, when a person makes a house, they don't normally make houses that way. And therefore, could it be that Hashem really told you the opposite? This is not a normal house. If you're told from Moshe that this is the order, how can you possibly second guess it based on the way a person makes a house? It's a very unlikely place to raise an objection from. I wouldn't have made my house that way. Well, it's not your house. Do what you're told. And then, finally, when Moshe concedes and says that Bezalel was right, he said, you must have overheard Hashem telling me the right order. But why is this evidence that Bezalel overheard? He wanted to reverse the order based on reason. He said a good svara. He said, that's not how you build a house. It doesn't mean he overheard. Very, very difficult Gemara. Bezalel says, I wouldn't build a house that way. And Moshe says, oh, you must have heard Hashem speaking to me. I didn't hear anything. I'm just telling you, I wouldn't build a house that way. V'kol zeh omer darsheni. Thus far, with regards to the general question of the order, Kelim versus Mishkan. But there are phraseology changes, and we would do well to note them. Each side of the Mishkan, north and south, comprised 20 beams. The Hebrew word for a beam is keresh. And how do you say 20 beams? Esrim kreshim. And that indeed is the way that they are referred to in our parsha. North side and south side, esrim kreshim. But if you go back to Parshas Truma, you will see that the 20 beams on the north side and the south side are not called esrim kreshim. They're called Esrim Keresh. 20 beam. Now, it could be that the singular can refer to the plural. It could be, but it's not intuitive. And it shifts from the Parshas Truma to our Parsha. What's behind the shift? Why there is 20 beams Esrim Keresh and here Esrim Kreshim? Another nuanced difference, and it may have struck us actually when we're learning Parshas Truma, but I think when you hear the Parsha, so you just assume that's the right way to say it. How many Kruvim are on top of the Aron? 2 Kruvim. And what is the correct way to say in Hebrew, 2 Kruvim? Shnei Kruvim? And that's the way it is said in our Parsha. Bezalel made Shnei Kruvim. But if you look back in Parshas Truma, it doesn't say Shnei Kruvim. it says that you are to make shnayim keruvim. Shnayim keruvim to us sounds a bit unwieldy, because shnayim is two. Shnei is two of. So whenever there's two of something, you say shnei that thing, not shnayim that thing. So our parsha seems to be the more intuitive, shnei keruvim. What then is behind Parshas Truma, which says shnayim keruvim? And so on and so forth. All of this requires our closer attention. And who is here to help us out? The great Rabbi Yeshua Heller. Rabbi Yeshua Heller is one of the great Talmidei Chachamim of Lithuania in the 1800s. He has a sefer of drushas called Ohel Yeshua. He has a 60-page drusha dealing with these questions. As you can appreciate, we will present the abridged version, but nonetheless, quite a bit to say. I think, you know, sometimes there are certain drushas that before you see them, you make Birchas HaTorah. And there are other drushas, before you go through them, you should say Tefillas HaDerech also, because it's quite a journey. But Rabbi Shua Heller begins as follows. He asks, or notes, every act comprises two elements. There is the motivation for the act, and the act itself. Or if we would put that into Torah terminology, there is the ahava, love of Hashem, which leads a person to act, the inner desire to fulfill Hashem's will, and there is the mitzvah itself. There is ahava, and there is mitzvah. And let us ask the question, which of them comes first? And before we rush to answer, we should note that we find both orders in the Torah. In fact, we find both orders between the two paragraphs of Shema that we say every day. The first paragraph puts ahava first, the motivation, and then the performance of the mitzvahs. For it begins, V'ohavta es Hashem Elokecha, leading to V'shilantam levanecha, U'kishartam, U'kisavtam. So it starts with V'ohavta, with the ahava, leading to performance of the mitzvahs. That's the first parsha. But when you can move to the second parsha, we note the order is reversed. Because in the second parsha, it begins with the mitzvahs, v'haya im shama'a tishma'u el mitzvosai, and then moves from there to le'ahava. So in the second paragraph, the mitzvahs come before the ahava. So which is it? Will the real order please step forward? Is it ahava before mitzvah, or mitzvah before ahava? Says Rabbi Shua Heller, it all depends on the spiritual level of the person. And he invokes the Mesilas Yesharim, who discusses this. A person who's on a high enough level, who naturally is inspired to do the right thing. So for them, the motivation comes before the act. The motivation leads to the act. But sometimes a person is not so inspired. Or you can have a type of person who's not so inspired. For him, the order is reversed. It's actually through the act which will breed within him a certain feeling. Doing the right thing in time will lead him to want to do the right thing. So interestingly, this very question of motivation versus action, which leads to which, depends on the madriga of the person, which is fascinating because it now turns out that the two parshas of Kriyat Shema represent two levels of Judaism, two levels of Torah observance. The first parsha is the higher level. Ahava leads to action. The second parsha is the relatively lower level where action leads to motivation. There is another shift in phraseology we find in the Torah, whereby sometimes the Torah refers to the Jewish people b'loshon rabbim, addresses them in the rabbim, in the plural. sometimes Beloshen Yachid in the singular. And examples, when the Jewish people encamp, is it Vayichan in the singular, the people encamped, or Vayachanu in the plural? We find both. Of course, Vayichan bespeaks a certain unity. And as we know, Vayichan Sham Yisrael, Ki Ish Echad, Belev Echad, when the people are as one, so then they are referred to as one entity. If there's a plurality, so then it's Loshon Rabim. But in terms of our discussion, we need to appreciate that the unity being referred to is not just an interpersonal unity, people coming together as one. It's a personal unity. Within the person himself is as one, because there's different elements within a person. If they're all headed in the same direction, that's a unified person. If they're heading in different directions, a lot of him wants to do the wrong thing, but part of him knows that he should do the right thing. So there's a plurality within the person, and part of him is being schlepped along with the other part. And therefore, Loshon Yochid represents a unified person. Again, if we go back to our earlier discussion, if your motivation is in accord with the right thing to do, that's achdus. That's a unity within the person. If there's discord, that's plurality within the person. And what is so fascinating about this? If you look back to the two paragraphs of Shema, which we've already seen reflect these two levels. The first one is the higher level, motivation before action. The second is the lower level, action lead to motivation. The first paragraph of Shema is Beloshen Yochid, is in the singular. Ve'ohavta es Hashem Elokecha. It's addressed to the singular. The second is Loshen Rabim. Im Shema Tishme'u, Lav es Hashem Elokechem. Because the two go together. The higher level is a unified person. The lower level is a discordant person. What does all of this have to do with us? We need to understand that even though, according to the Ramban and others, the order of the parshas as we read them is the order of events as they occurred. That means you have the instruction for the Mishkan, and then the Egel happened, which shelved the Mishkan, and then it came back to be implemented after the Egel. So you have instruction, then Egel, and then construction. That's the Seder of the Parshios. According to Ramban, that's the Seder that it happened. But we need to appreciate that even if the Mishkan came back after the Egel, it's not exactly the same. The Jewish people underwent a metamorphosis of sorts as a result of the Egel. Before the Egel, they're on the higher level that we spoke about. And interestingly, it is before the Cheta Egel that we find them being addressed in the singular. Vayichan Sham Yisrael Neged Ahar. Because they're there as one, all heading in the same direction. Post the Egel, when you have now this disparity of forces within the people themselves, within each person themselves, so Vayichan becomes Vayachanu. The Egel made a difference. Life was never the same after the Egel, and the Mishkan was never the same after the Egel. How do we see this? The Mishkan is there for the benefit of the Jewish people. It's there to help the Jewish people in their spiritual existence. But it also has to reflect the level of the Jewish people. If it doesn't reflect their level, it won't help them. And what is the level of the Jewish people? Let's talk about three lists of 613. Two of them, I think, are well known, and then we'll discover a third. As we know, there are 613 mitzvahs in the Torah. We also know that there are 613 parts to the person. The Ramach Evarim, the 248 limbs, the Shasa Gidim, the 365 sinews, and that makes up the person. So you have two composites of 613. Says Rabbi Yeshua Heller, there is a third. If you go through every single component part of the Mishkan, from beams to sockets to hooks to vessels to coverings, you will make a staggering discovery, and that is that there are exactly 613 component parts to the Mishkan. And he, in fact, compiles a list, he makes a table, and tallies up to 613. What does this have to do with us? Well, we don't know exactly which mitzvah links up to which part of the body. Not in such a detailed way. But we can certainly posit with confidence that there are inner mitzvahs and there are outer mitzvahs. That is to say, there are mitzvahs that relate to the emotions and there are mitzvahs that relate to actions. And there are inner parts to the person and outer parts to the person. Surely it is correct and reasonable to surmise that the inner part of the person, the inner organs, correspond to the inner mitzvahs that are more emotional based, whereas the outer part of the person correspond to the outer mitzvahs, which are more action based. And the same is true, says Rabbi Yeshua Heller, with regards to the Mishkan. You have the inner components and the outer body. The inner components relate to the more inner mitzvahs and the more inner parts of the person. And the outer part of the Mishkan relates to the more practical and external mitzvahs, the more external parts of the person. And now we can begin to understand why the order of vessels versus building was reversed. It reflects the decline in the level of the Jewish people. In Parshas Truma, before the Chet HaEgel, the Jewish people are on a level where Ahava should lead to mitzvahs. And therefore the direction, if we could say, the vector of Avoda is inside out. It starts from the inside and progresses to the outside. And likewise, therefore, the command at that time was to start by building the inner parts of the Mishkan and from there to move to the outer parts of the Mishkan. But with the Egel, the Jewish people's level fell from unity to plurality. Now, the way that they need to go about their service of Hashem is reversed. It starts from the outside and then moves to the inside. Correspondingly, therefore, the construction of the Mishkan post-Egel starts with the body of the Mishkan, and then you move towards constructing the internal vessels of the Mishkan. And this explains not only the general change in order of vessels to Mishkan, but even those nuanced points. And all of this gives us a fuller picture. Because as we saw, what typified and characterized the Jewish people before the Chet HaEgel was a unity. And therefore, wherever you can, even plural, before the Egel is described as a unity. Even if there's 20 beams, the Torah will call it Esrim Keresh, Loshen Yachid, wherever possible. But after the Chet HaEgel, when there's plurality within the people, Esrim Keresh becomes Esrim Krashim. Keresh became Krashim. Unity became plurality. You see it in such a detail. And moreover, we talk about the two kruvim. And what is the way that they're referred to? Before the Egel, in Parshas Truma, they're called Shnayim kruvim. After the Egel, they're called Shnei kruvim. Which is more correct? We would say Shnei kruvim. But when would you ever say Shnayim about something? Shnayim The difference between shnei and shnaim, says Rabbi Shua Heller, is shnei means two. But that doesn't tell you there's any connection between those two things. Two is just one and one. But never the twain shall meet. Shnaim is always reflects or depicts a cohesion between the two. Pairs of things are always called with in that way. And don't we know that when the Jewish people fulfilled Hashem's will in the ultimate way, the Kruvim are connected to each other. Connected Kruvim are called Shnayim Kruvim. But if the level of the people will fall, disconnected Kruvim is called Shnei Kruvim. The shift from Shnayim to Shnei once again reflects the impact of the Egel. In a fascinating aside, and it's actually full of asides, this drasha of Rabbi Shua Heller. It's got 11 introductions. But in one of his asides, he refers us to the episode in Sefer Yehoshua, which is the Haftarah for Parsha Shalach, those two spies that are sent to take a look at the land of Israel. If you follow the Parshas, you'll see sometimes they're called Shnei Anoshim, and sometimes Shnayim Anoshim. And it all depends on whether they're together or not. They left together, but they had to split up at a certain point. There's still two of them, but they're not together. And they go from Shnayim Anoshim to Shnei Anoshim. Once the Yesod is out, it now spills over into all of Tanakh and so on and so forth. These then are what is behind. It is this development called the Chet HaEgel, which is behind all the differences between the Mishkan in Truma and the Mishkan in Vayakhel. And now we can understand, or begin to understand, the ununderstandable. Namely, Moshe would reverse Hashem's instructions as to how to go about the order of construction of the Mishkan. Hashem said to Moshe explicitly, tell Bezalel, first the body of the Mishkan, then the Kelim. And Moshe went and reversed it. How could he possibly deviate from Hashem's instructions? But the truth is, says Rabbi Shua Heller, Moshe here, this deviation is no different than every other time Moshe defies, so to speak, what Hashem has told him, because he's defending the Jewish people. Hashem says, I'm going to destroy the Jewish people. Moshe doesn't say, okay, if that's your will. Moshe says, no, mecheni na misifrecha. Hashem says, I'm going to lead them indirectly through a malach. Moshe doesn't say, okay. He says, under no circumstances. And Hashem says, the people have suffered a fall, and the order of the Mishkan needs to be recalibrated. And Moshe is not okay with it, because he would like to see the Jewish people striving towards and within striking distance of their original Madrega. This is consistent with Moshe as looking wherever possible to reverse the fallout from the Egel. And that includes now reversing the order. First the Kelim, then the Mishkan, as was intended. Can it be done? But Bezalel says it can't be done. Minhago shel olam. It's not the way a person builds a house. As if to say, Bezalel isn't talking about how people build houses. This is not a normal house. But he's saying, the reality is we are closer to Minhago shel olam, closer than we were, certainly closer than you are. And we have to be true to how we are now. It's Minhago shel olam. And indeed, there is a further point here. Bezalel is not introduced as the one who's responsible for making the Egel making the Mishkan until after the Egel has begun. Until that point, Hashem only addresses Moshe. Ve'osisa, you shall make. The simple translation of those words sounds like Moshe is the one to make the Mishkan. Says Rabbi Shua Heller, maybe so. But Moshe makes the Mishkan if the Mishkan is being constructed on the optimum level, because whatever Moshe does is on the optimum level. Part of the transition post the Egel is not only how the Mishkan should be made, but who now is the one to make it. It's no longer Moshe, it's Bezalel. Bezalel Kael. The Jewish people themselves are in Hashem's shade. They're not in the light as they originally were. And therefore Bezalel's argument to Moshe is, if I'm the one making the Mishkan, it can only be because things have changed, and maybe therefore we really do need to go with Minhago Shel Olam, first the body of the Mishkan, then the vessels of the Mishkan, outside in, and that's how the Jewish people will succeed in their present frame. So it's an absolutely, I would say, overwhelming approach where so many different elements, and we've mentioned few of many. You are, of course, invited to take a look at the full 60 pages at your own leisure. I'd prepare for Shabbos beforehand, but you see how the one theme explains all of these things. It really is a masterpiece. Well, in addition to being Parshas Vayakhel, this week is also Parsha Shkolim. Parsha Shkolim, the week before Rosh Chodesh Adar, the Shabbos before, is Parsha Shkolim. And what is behind, and what is Parsha Shkolim? Every year, everyone would give the Machzis HaShekel, and how does that translate into this time of year? Well, there is the simple answer, meaning the practical answer, and then there is another answer. And they're both given in the Gemara. The simple answer is that we're counting back from Nisan. Rosh Chodesh Nisan, korbanos need to be brought from a new collection, new donations. So we need to have that money in by Rosh Chodesh Nisan. And therefore, they would announce on Rosh Chodesh Adar that everyone should give their Machzis HaShekel. That itself is a very inspiring idea, that within the space of a month, it's possible to organize a nationwide collection of Machzis HaShekel. I don't know if that's encouraging, maybe it's depressing, given the amount of time it takes in our time. But it's 1 month counting back from Rosh Chodesh Nisan. But according to the Gemara, the timing of the Machzis HaShekel collection is not just about counting back from Nisan, it's about Purim. Don't skip over the month of Purim, which is halfway through Adar. Don't just look for 30 days' time for Rosh Chodesh Nisan. It's related to Purim. How so? Says the Gemara, part of Haman's plan and his plot with regards to the Jewish people was to offer money. Aseres alafim ki karkesef eshkol al yidei osei amelacha. He was prepared to pay out money to defray the expenses of his plans for the Jewish people. Says the Gemara in Maseches Megillah, Daf Yud Gimel, HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows that in time Haman he'll pay out his shekels for the Jewish people. Lefichach hikdim shkaleihem l'shkalav. Therefore, Hashem preceded their shekels to Haman's shekel. And that is why Machzis HaShekel is always collected before Purim. As we can appreciate, this is something of an enigmatic statement. Haman shekels, their Machzis HaShekel, how does one offset the other? How is one the antidote for the other? And the Mefarshim explain. What is Haman thinking? He knows the Jewish people have a history of succeeding against their enemies, but somehow he feels that he, together with Achashverosh, he can succeed against them. The answer is in the way that Haman describes the Jewish people. Famous words, Perek Gimel of Megillas Esther, Yeshno Am Echad Mifuzar Umifurad. There is one nation who are mifuzar, scattered, mifurad, separate, are those two ways of saying the same thing. Rav Shlomo HaLevi Alkabetz, in his monumental commentary on the Haggadah, on the Megillah, Manos HaLevi, explains that these are not the same thing. Mifuzar means physically they're separate, they're scattered all over the place. But mifurad means that they are detached from each other. They're not as one. They don't care about each other. They're not looking out for each other. There may be disputes between them. And with that lack of unity, they are at risk. They are vulnerable. And therefore Haman feels he can succeed. And the truth of the matter is, says Manos Halevi, had things stayed the way they were, who knows? But something happened. And that is why the beginning of the recovery is framed with Esther's words to Mordechai, Lech Kenos es kol ha-Yehudim. Go and gather all the Jewish people together. If they stay mefurad, a number of individuals, they are at risk. Let them gather together, to come together as one. That is how we will sustain the situation and get out of the situation. And in fact, there's a very wonderful comment by one of the great Darshanim of Italy in the 1500s, Rabbi Azaria Feggio, in his work Bina Le'itim. Esther says, they should fast for 3 days. V'tzumu alai. What does she mean by adding the word alai? Because, as we discussed a couple of weeks ago, when we spoke about the Kohen Gadol, and he carries the names of the Shvatim with him wherever he goes, full unity is not just assembling together, it's having other people's interests at heart. And Esther is looking to implement that. And what does she say? She says, the Jewish people's lives are in danger from Haman. I'm not. But I'm about to put my life in danger from Achashverosh. That's my problem. It's not their problem. Here's what I ask of the Jewish people. An unbelievable thing. They should fast for 3 days, but not for themselves. They should fast for me. That's called unity. Having someone else's interests at heart. And she says, V'gamani v'na'arosai atzum kain. Me and my girls, we will fast kain. Similarly how? We will also set aside our own concerns and fast for you. That's called Lech Kenos es kol ha-Yehudim. A fascinating diuk within the psukim. Tzumu alai and atzum kain. So much so, says the Manos Halevi, Reb Shlomo Halevi Alkabetz, this idea is so central to what is happening in Purim, it becomes the backbone of one of the mitzvahs of Purim, Mishloach Manos. The goal of Mishloach Manos is nothing less than to foster good feeling between the Jewish people. And that's what happens. That's what happens. Everyone feels good when they receive Mishloach Manos. I don't think anyone is hungry by the time they receive Mishloach Manos. And certainly it's not something that they need per se. Especially not if this is already the third Hakofa, that they're seeing it come back to them. But it's a cycle of goodness. And it reinforces the way that we were able to triumph at the time of the Purim story. One of the great and primary concepts within the Purim story represented and depicted by the Megillah is V'nafochu. Whatever Haman does rebounds against him. And to see what that means in this regard. The full irony of the situation is, Haman sees the Jewish people disparate and feels that he can damage them and issues his decree. In so doing, he unites them. In other words, the Jewish people had a problem and Haman's decree led to the solution. Their problem was they were chronically at odds with each other. And what brought them together is Haman. He identified the problem. He thought he had his own solution. But in the end, he contributed to their solution. Haman is referred to in the Megillah as Tzorer HaYehudim. Haman HaAgagi, Tzorer HaYehudim. What is the meaning of Tzorer HaYehudim? It comes from the word Tsar, Tzoros, oppressor. He is the oppressor of the Jewish people. But the word Tzorer also has another meaning. A tzror is a collection. It's an assembly. Haman was the oppressor of the Jewish people, Tzorer HaYehudim. But he was also the collector of the Jewish people, Tzorer HaYehudim. He was the one that inspired them to get together in order to defend themselves against him. That's the great irony. I don't think Haman got a lot of nachas from that at the time, but he was the one that brought the Jewish people back together. This crucial concept, it actually exists within a mitzvah. And as we know, mitzvahs are commands, but they contain concepts which should then be applied even in a broader setting. The concept of Jewish unity is in the Machzis HaShekel. Because the Machzis HaShekel is everyone contributing uniformly to the same cause. And no one can give more or less. It's a great leveler. And it's half of a shekel. It's not even a whole shekel. Everyone is aware by the very nature of their donation that they are part of something. And they're part of this amazing thing called this mitzvah, which is contains within it the central theme of the oneness of the Jewish people. And that is the deeper understanding of why the Gemara says Hashem saw that Haman would pay out money. He'd pay out shekels for the Jewish people, but their shekels got in there first. In other words, he's able to mobilize his idea because there is pirud amongst them. There's discord amongst them, but they have the capacity already given to them to recover from that. The unity that's represented by the Machzis HaShekel. Their shkolim got in there first. What's fascinating is, even earlier than the Purim story, we find Haman's forebears, against their own desires and interests, serving to unify the Jewish people. We mentioned before the Pasuk, as when we came before Har Sinai, Vayichan Sham Yisrael, Negatahar, Vayichan in the singular. And although we spoke about it and we developed it as a personal unity within the person himself, the simple understanding, of course, is that they were unified as a people. And we never find this before. We never find them as one. How did they come to Har Sinai as one? What happened? Well, where did they come from? They came from Rephidim. Vayisu Rephidim, Vayichan Sham Yisrael. And what happened in Rephidim? Amalek happened. The very first time, one could almost call it Maase Avos for the Purim story, in that the Jewish people have got their quibbles and they've got their quarrels and they've got their squabbles. But when Amalek attacks, they close ranks. All those differences dissolve. The very first unifier of the Jewish people was Amalek. And indeed, the Medrash says that Hashem is not prepared to give the Torah to the Jewish people until they're one. And they didn't become one until Amalek attacked them. Which means that the full unbelievable irony of the situation is that Amalek were instrumental in enabling and preparing the Jewish people to receive the Torah. And I don't think they got a lot of nachas out of that either. And these are the full v'nafuchsus of beginning with Vayichan Sham Yisrael and then becoming Haman Tzorer HaYehudi. And this is, I think, certainly much food for thought as we enter into the season of Purim. And it begins the very first thing, the very first nod to Purim, the very first entry of the Purim ideas is Parsha Shkolim. Before Rosh Chodesh Adar, the Machzis HaShekel, to allow the Jewish people to become one again. And that now becomes, I would say, not only to celebrate and commemorate the unity that we achieved at the time of the Purim story, but perhaps to emulate and perhaps to reclaim a bit of that, because we do need a bit more of that. We're surrounded by tzorers. The whole concept of Jewish unity is easier said than done. And that seems quite obvious. But even if it's easier said than done, if it isn't said, it will never get done. Which means that one needs to try and follow through. But the answer is not to talk about it at all. And what is the beginning of the way forward there? That now as then, the enemies of the Jewish people are serving as Tzorer HaYehudim, which means as long as they're there as our enemies, it means we need them as our enemies. So when do they become redundant? When we can perhaps begin to fulfill their function by ourselves. In other words, the goal is to develop unity based on love from within and not fear from without. It shouldn't take someone outside of us for us to group together. And especially, I would say, as we are witnessing, Baruch Hashem, the kibbutz Golios, where different types of Jews have never been more different from each other and more closer together than they are now. Any given apartment building in Yerushalayim is a micro kibbutz Golios. I mean, as you go from floor to floor. Even just, it struck me a week or two ago, I was walking up the stairs and I heard Motzei Shabbos Miras from two adjacent apartment buildings, and one of them was Moroccan and the other was a Yekki from Leipzig, and they're both singing their Motzei Shabbos Miras. And the more we emphasize and centralize the family aspect of the Jewish people, that all Jewish people are brothers and sisters with each other, regardless of cultural and geographical points of origin, the more we will make our own move towards Leich Kenosas Kol HaYehudim, the more we develop these feelings of unity with each other, Mitz Hashem, the more we should see LaYehudim HaYisra'ora in our own particular way, based on the Megillah, but this time for good. All the very best. Have a wonderful evening and a great week ahead.